Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is show 103. The day is, I actually have to check, which is kind of sad, Friday, January 3rd, 2020. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker once again. Long drive home from the Sky Bunker in Maine yesterday. And once again, my life these days, it's just that there's lots of adventure. Susan, on the middle of I-95, halfway home, realizes she doesn't have her wallet with her. The Occam's razor solution was that when she stopped to get a snack in a little road, a little cafe in Maine, that she had left it in there. That was long closed by the time she had this revelation. She had this revelation as we were about to go to the very excellent Treehouse Brewing Company, one for folks to note who like beer, who are spending time in and around the Boston, Eastern Massachusetts area. I think that's Matt Bernier country over there. These days, I think he's out towards the West. But anyway, we were going to Treehouse, and the visit was nearly spoiled by Susan realizing that she'd left her wallet. Fortunately, woke up this morning when the place opened, and sure enough, the wallet was there. I had, of course, prophesied that this was going to be the case using Occam's razor and was told that I was being way too optimistic and all this stuff. Anyway, I was right. The wallet is fine. On the way via FedEx. Happy ending for now, but a little too much drama for me early in this, late last year, early this year. I'm ready for some good, boring, productive work weeks. That's what I want. And it's going to start off today. We're recording two shows. This is, of course, the regular In the Money show. We'll be doing a Naira Betts show to follow it up. And to join me for both of these endeavors, we have my usual partner in crime. And I think just now finished up at the Dallas DMV. Did you get your new license? Is everything okay? I'm talking, of course, about the people's champion, Jonathan Kitchen. JK, what's up?
Dude, that DMV thing was like one of the worst experiences of my life.
I think you've had a charmed life that you can say that. I'll just jump in with that right away. frustrating, I'll give you.
This summer, you know, July 1st is my birthday, so I drove up to Saratoga like July 10th. I stopped at the movie theater in Memphis, Tennessee, where we stayed at the 10 Strike back house. Austin and I, we went to see Spider-Man. And while we were seeing Spider-Man, after a long 9-hour drive, I wanted an adult beverage. And that's when I realized that I was going to spend the entire summer at Saratoga with an expired driver's license expired on my birthday. I did it. I pulled it off. Only had to pull the passport out once. And of all the places at Druthers, I was like, dude, I've had a beer here every day for 17 days. How do you not know that I'm 21? But anyways. So I had to finally go to the DMV, and I went on a Friday after Christmas, and I found out later after waiting there for 5.5 hours that Monday through Thursday they were closed. And so I literally picked the worst day of the year to go to the DMV, and I paid for it dearly.
Well, it all worked out. Naomi Tucker, very able in your absence, coming on, talking a little bit about those races on opening day from the rescheduled opening day at Santa Anita, and also that terrific interview she did with Mike Smith. Did you get a chance to hear that?
I did. I did get to hear that. And it's probably better that I was at the DMV instead of on the call while that was happening, because I bet I would have fanboyed out a little bit too much, and it might have been hard for the listeners to listen to.
Oh, that's funny. But that was fun. If folks missed that, you should go back and check it out. Little housekeeping. The network is really becoming a network. We'll have more news on this soon, but we're now going to have individual feeds for the different shows. There will still be a master feed. If you currently subscribe to iTunes, no action necessary. That will have already migrated, even though you don't know it, over to the new In the Money master feed, where every single show we do will appear there. But I get it. Some folks only want to listen to the flagship. Some folks only want to hear In the Ring. Some folks only want to hear Spencer. Whatever it is, you can now subscribe to those individually. And it probably will end up helping us out, actually, if you subscribe to the individual feeds. We'll put that information out there. And hopefully folks will come along for the ride as we enter what's going to be a very exciting 2020. I've teased that we're going to have an announcement coming up. We haven't finalized it yet enough to talk about it, but I think it's going to be a big year over here here on the In the Money Network. Rumors are maybe as many as two new shows happening. That's another reason why we thought it might be wise to divide things out into the individual feeds. And I think, JK, production meeting in the middle of the show, I think that the individual track shows should stay in the flagship feed because sometimes they're a little bit intermittent. You don't know exactly when an Ira show is going to publish or a Keeneland show is going to publish or when we might have a special for our friends at Woodbine or Monmouth. So I think we're going to put those track shows just right in the main feed as well. And then we'll separate out the new entities as well as In the Ring and Redboard Rewind. Does that work for you?
Completely agree.
All right, good. I'm glad we're on the same page. As far as that goes, we haven't really had a chance to talk amongst ourselves about Santa Anita opening day and the plethora of stakes races therein. Naomi and I discussed it a bit, and you sounded like you heard that show. Did you agree with my theory that Naomi concurred with as well about the Omaha Beach win being one of those rare instances where the final time didn't matter all that much, and this was a horse who actually could have run much faster given that he was basically in a high canter and never asked to run at any point of the race. I saw some people on Twitter, some people I thought should know better, crabbing the figure a little bit, and I just thought it was crazy. I thought that was an awesome effort.
Yeah, I agree. I actually agree with exactly what you said, is that, like, you know, look at the Songbirds of the world and the other, I'm trying to think of some other just kind of flashy horses, Godzilla at Saratoga this summer. You know, these horses that they in the final 16th, they're not being asked. But at some point, they were asked to run. They got crosses with the reins thrown at them. They were got shoulder taps or were encouraged. It doesn't feel like Omaha Beach was ever even kind of asked. Like, he just did that on the bridle the entire time. I thought it was impressive. And the figure's not something that I'll concern myself with. I think what I'll look at is once I go and dive deep into the Pegasus race and I see that, oh, the last figure was slow, I'm going to pretend that the figure doesn't exist in that race, and I'll just look back to the previous two figures, and if that figure fits, then that fits. But I don't think it was as slow as some people. What was the buyer?
I think it came back 101. The yeah. Crabbing came about from the fact that Hard Not to Love, who we'll talk about in a minute, actually earned a 102. But I mean, to me, and this, I made this point on the other show, so forgive me for repeating myself, but it was such a great, it could be like almost a lesson in a handicapping book of when the times can be misleading. Because to me, Hard Not to Love got like the greatest setup to produce the optimal time. And Omaha Beach, as you said, I think the time's almost irrelevant. And it's very rare that very rare that I feel that way. I agree with what you said. Not only never asked at any point in the race, but watch the way the horse brings himself into the race himself. It's just a very rare thing to see that a horse exude that kind of talent and class on the racetrack. If I were making ability figures, which is, of course, the process in Mike Maloney's Betting with an Edge that he describes, I'd feel comfortable calling that 101 a 106, honestly. And that's a big difference. But it for me, is a more accurate reflection of the talent just based on what I saw on the track. Now, that's not exactly the way Mike uses those ability figures, and I don't mean to speak for him. Sometimes I know he really likes it when he can drill down into a number. But I mean, I think this is the rare instance where that's not the right move. And I would be, let's put it this way, JK, I would be shocked senseless if Omaha Beach doesn't come out as an extremely likely winner when you do your handicapping of the Pegasus. I think he's odds on in the odds checker betting as of right now. And with the news, especially that Maximum Security is going to be not running in that spot.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, I think that he's going to be tough. Omaha Beach will. And I really do wish that we could have a year with him. And it seems like he's really kind of found himself. He's shown to be extremely versatile with the winds going a mile and an eighth, the winds going six against a horse like Chancelot, and then obviously this Malibu performance. And he ran well enough in the dirt mile. I'd love to see a horse like this take on a campaign that would see the Met Mile and the Whitney or the Pacific Classic and then the Breeders' Cup Classic at Keeneland. It'd be great, but unfortunately he's got other plans.
Yes, and that actually is another topic. Maybe we'll talk about some other time. I've been going back and forth on Twitter about the different factors in racing versus racing to race versus racing to breed. The economic reality of the situation is it makes all the sense in the world for the Pegasus to be his last race. But, of course, as a racing fan, it's extremely you just feel like you're missing out. That's all. This was a horse who I think was going to do some spectacular things. Just looking quickly at the betting in for the Pegasus, Omaha Beach currently best price available 4-5. McKinsey listed in there at 3-1. Spun to Run in the betting at 9-2. Bravazo and Higher Power both listed next at 12-1. Any of those numbers do anything for you from this far out?
No. And I don't think McKinsey's gonna. I thought McKinsey's running in Saudi, so
could be
Saudi
both.
Like right on top.
No.
Yeah.
It's a month.
Yeah, but I don't know if he's running in the Pegasus.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, again, I'm just reading off odds checker here, so yeah. It's not. Let me see if he's priced up at every book. He is priced up at every book, which is usually a good indication that it's a live possibility, but that certainly makes the McKinsey prices terrible. If you're not sure he's even running, you're certainly not going to want to take 5-2, 3-1 against the likes of Omaha Beach. But it wouldn't surprise me either way. I mean, for Baffert, if I'm right and it's a full month out, that would not be crazy at all. But I don't know. Maybe you've been texting with your boy B Squared, and maybe you have some inside information you just haven't shared with us yet, JK.
No, we did text, but it had nothing to do with McKinsey. I was asking about a horse that he ran the other day. So. Good info.
That's impressive. Well, we'll be leaning on that at some point this year. There's no doubt about it. Let's talk a little bit more about Maximum Security, the news that he's spinning this race and heading to Saudi instead. From his point of view, it makes perfect sense. It's really too bad. It would have been so fun. It would have been so fun to get to see that showdown. I described it on Twitter, I think, as it would have been, you know, for the belt, more or less, as a best three-year-old. I guess if we could have gotten Code of Honor in there, it really would have been with those three. As much as people have made cracks about the three horses that won the Triple Crown races and their lack of productivity since, we did see some good three-year-olds last year. It's a shame we're not going to get to see them sorted out on the racetrack.
Well, look, I think when you see the three-year-olds beating the older horses a number of times, I think that's an indication that it was a pretty good group. I mean, obviously, the Triple Crown didn't necessarily pan out well. I mean, obviously, Maximum Security, but, you know, I think that you got to be careful with dismissing this group. Spun to Run was a three-year-old who beat older. And then Maximum Security. Is a three-year-old that beat olders in both of those in grade one performances against horses like Omaha Beach. So it's like, I think the field is, the group is fine. And the really sad part is if those horses were to both go on to have four-year-old years, they'd be magnificent four-year-olds. Omaha Beach, Spun to Run, Maximum Security. I'd imagine Spun to Run will go on. But, you know, so then there'd be a real opportunity for them to be, you know, have a kind of special older horse type feel that will then validate the fact that this wasn't actually an okay group. Now, was it the deepest group? No, probably not. But I think that at the top, it definitely deserves some credit for being a good group.
Yeah, I don't think it's worth holding the specific results of the Triple Crown races against an entire generation. I can see how that would be the knee-jerk reaction of some maybe really casual fans, but I mean, people who really know and bet horses should know better. And I guess the good news out of all this is it does seem like we're going to have Code of Honor, Maximum Security, and this, JK, turning into a real potential heavyweight fight type rivalry should it ever appear on the track. Gosh, maybe their paths will be so separate that it won't. God, that would be disappointing. But with there was an article the other day on, was it Horse Racing Nation? I'm going to go with Shug McGahey didn't realize he was on the record with some of the comments he made about, what did he say exactly? You read it more recently than me.
I think he used the word chicken, but he just kind of was saying that
he didn't know he was on the record. This is not a good look from a classy man. There's definitely something to explain this, I think. I mean, look, it's in a funny way, it's almost refreshing to hear somebody just like really cut the crap, as it were, and lay out an opinion that must be honest on some level. But I mean, for somebody like this who's been in the spotlight for decades and is all class, it's very uncharacteristic. Let's put it this way. What did you think?
It sounds a little bit like sour grapes, and that's unfortunate. Like you mentioned, Suge is a man that I think is very well respected in this industry and in this game for being a classy type. And so I think your prediction that the was off the record is probably an accurate one. You know, look, I have a friend of the show who I won't name, who's very passionate and was excited that Suge kind of called out Jason Service and was poking him for all the things that Jason Service is or isn't. And also for the fact that they skipped the Breeders' Cup. But look, I'm not really upset that he skipped the Breeders' Cup. It kind of makes sense to me. You know, they ran in the Haskell. They showed up for that big dance and ran well. They were planning on running in the Travers, and then he just wasn't up snuff, so they didn't enter. Then they were going to run the Pennsylvania Derby, and he had a little bit of a setback.
He had a colic. I mean, it's not like there was anything. I mean, I guess maybe a critic would say that I'm taking on face value, but I mean, I have no reason to doubt the idea that the horse had it tied up. And they were fortunate to get him back to race at all after what happened. I mean, unless you want to call the guy an out-and-out liar, that's what happened. I mean, that's not chicken.
Right. And if you look at the schedule, it makes sense. So that was September 21st where he had that issue. Then they kind of obviously had to put the, you know, take off the gas pedal a little bit there. Then he shows up October 26th, a week before the Breeders' Cup, and runs in the Bold Ruler in what everyone would say was a very easy spot of prep that he wouldn't have to run all out, in which a week later he would have to run all out against probably one of the most likely winners of the entire weekend in Omaha Beach. And then he shows up and runs well the Cigar Mile. I feel like it was a setback. He had a reason for not going to the Breeders' Cup. I just don't buy it that if he was 100% ready to rock, that they would have dodged that race for the easier spot. Because in all reality, Horse of the Year was still on the line for maximum security. I mean, I doubt he could, but if he would have won the Classic, there would have been an argument for him to. He would have gotten votes for Horse of the Year. I don't think he would have beat Bricks and Mortar or Matoli.
No,
but
I don't agree. I think he wins. I think he wins Horse of the Year. If he wins the Classic after finishing first in the Derby, and I mean, maybe he'd also need to come back and win the Cigar, maybe, but I mean, he'd have gotten a lot of votes, and it'd be, I mean, just my first knee jerk is he wins it. I mean, I think that's quite a double. I know it didn't count, but finishing first in the Derby and then winning a loaded Breeders' Cup Classic, I mean, it'd been tough to deny. So I think you're on the right track there.
Yeah, even if you're one of those people that doesn't, and there's a lot of people that don't, and I'm fine with that, that doesn't subscribe to the cross the wire first in a Derby thing. If that's not you and you don't get that, that's fine. But he also won the Florida Derby, and he also won the Haskell. So, and then winning the Classic against older horses.
Yeah, he would have won.
Have a compelling argument.
Yeah, he would have
won, you know, 1.5 Classics. and that's pretty strong.
And the Breeders' Cup Classic, especially on dirt, I mean, I really feel like with voters counts as two. And there's nothing against Bricks and Mortar at all. It's just, but they've got another award to give him. And if you had a dirt horse that won the biggest race and had two other grade ones, with or without the Cigar Mile, potentially three other, it's hard to know, obviously, how that all would have gone down. But anyway, I don't think there was a ducking about that. I think the plan that you laid out makes the most sense. I don't necessarily, I mean, maybe there's a little bit of ducking about not showing up at the Pegasus, knowing what a tough race that would be with Omaha Beach in there when you could just run off the bench for a lot more money. But the economics of it, to me, it makes sense. I mean, this horse has a checkered history when showing up for unplanned prep races. So it's not crazy to me that they decide not to go to the Pegasus, but again, very disappointing as a racing fan.
No, I completely agree. It'd be nice to have them all show up in one race, but it's not that easy.
Let's move on to talk about some of the other races from Saturday at Santa Anita. The La Brea, we talked about Hard Not to Love and the 102 buyer speed figure there. Mike Smith was very eloquent talking about how this was not at all the plan, and it worked out very well for Hard Not to Love, who showed some class in running down the two that I know you needed for your pick six, JK. What did you think about this performance?
Look, I mean, she ran well. You know, she got a little bit of a setup. She's probably not the type that I'm going to, you know, cut in line to bet next time. I, you know, they ran in front of her. That's for sure. But look, I mean, that's a huge win for those connections. You have a filly who can get that grade one win on the dirt, going 7/8 in a La Brea. I mean, that's a real broodmare making race, you know, and she's going to be worth twice as much as she was before she ran that race. So that's always good. She hasn't always broke well. It's kind of been a thing for her. Obviously she'll need to get that corrected as the races get a little bit tougher and she doesn't want to lose that type of position when you're going in the two turn races that will lead up that I'd imagine she'll start to kind of run in, but she was good, but she did get a setup.
I agree. Claps to connections, but not one I will be looking to bet next time. In all likelihood, you mentioned, of course, your Mike Smith fandom. Do you have any reflections on getting to see him take down that big market? Controversial figure among some, at least our goofy friend Benny South Street, who still wants to talk about the bad things about Mike Smith. I don't agree with him. I think they call him Big Money Mike for a reason. I was happy to see him get this mark.
Yeah, I can imagine a horse, you know, a rider like Mike being frustrating for someone like Benny, who, and I don't mean this to be in a disparaging way, but, you know, he's more of a value guy. So Mike's horses are typically overbet. And so when he does land on them, they probably get beat and he's frustrated because he got sucked into the lower price arena. And then when he tries to beat them, then he beats them. So it's like this like zigging and zagging frustration when it comes to Mike, I would guess. I'm sure he would get on and say that he actually thinks he's whatever, but you know what I'm saying. So, I mean, look, and the great thing about Mike is he's good at everything, right? He's good on the front end, and then he'll get you these wins where he comes from off of it. I mean, arguably some of his most impressive wins and most impressive horses and performances and partnerships have been with horses that are completely opposite. You know, with horses that are front running types like Songbird and Justify, and then horses like Zenyatta and Drosselmeyer. And so he's very versatile in what he does.
Any other thoughts on opening day? Lady Prancelot gets a grade one in the American Oaks, earns a 91 buyer speed figure there. I was a big fan in this spot. I thought it just looked like the day for the breakthrough. Not sure going forward what this division is going to look like, but curious if you had any out of this race you wanted to follow going forward.
I mean, Lady Prancelot in California, I mean, she's obviously a quote-unquote East Coast type of turf horse living on the West Coast, so I think she'll be beating up on those fillies and mares for majority of the year. Here's the thing about her is that, and why one of the reasons why turf racing can be so maddening is that, like, on paper, once you do a deep dive, you look at that race and you say, she has to win. But then you remember that it's on turf and she can get a bad trip and this can happen and that can happen. If it was on dirt, it would be an ice cold, no one can beat her thing. The way that I decided to play, I was like, I'm going to just do that. I'm going to treat it like it's a dirt race and that she's going to win. She's just better than those horses. And that's really all there is to it. And I think she'll continue to beat up on them. And I'd imagine we'll see her out on the East Coast occasionally over the next year, trying to pluck some spots out there, but she'll have to run into some of those Chad Brown types.
Let's talk for a minute about the Mathis brothers, Mile Mo Forza with the 98 buyer speed figure. Is this the kind of horse you think will be a player in the division out there, or could he be more than that?
Well, I think we're going to find out. From what I understand, the next stop is going to be the Pegasus Turf. So he's a frustrating horse for me personally. I just continuously try to beat him, and I've tried to beat him the last three times. And if you look at his PPs, he's won his last three races. So obviously that's a little bit frustrating. So he a very interesting horse. And like I said, we'll find out in about 20 days how good he really is.
Very nice pick by Matt Bernier on the show there with Originaire, who could have even gone better potentially with a little bit more luck in running, but a very nice 13-1 second place finisher from Matt. It was great to hear him back on these airwaves again. What else did we have out there? We had Mirth for our friends at Little Red Feather winning the Bobby Frankel Grade 3 with a 90 buyer speed figure. I was on Excellent Sunset and felt a little bit hard done by the trip, but all the props in the world to Mirth for showing a lot of class and getting the job done. What did you think of this one? How had you played it?
Man, I really love fillies like her, where, you know, she got the big win, I think it was two races back, where she wired the field to San Anita. And then this race where she came from off of it, she took the lead, then got beat, and then dug in and came back. I love gameness like that. She's the type of filly that she'll win a lot of races here on the West Coast, and just by the way that she does what she does, you know, game, forward, hard trying. She has a lot of toughness. I think that that'll go a long way on the turf out there in California, and I imagine she'll get on a plane at some point too, if she continues to beat up on them, and her speed will be dangerous out on the East Coast.
What do you think about Excellent Sunset? I'm just imagining looking at her PP next time, and she's going to have this like super underachiever look of getting beat at short prices. But I just feel like there's so many excuses. Are you at a point with her where you're ready to say maybe some of this trouble is of her own making? I feel like I'm ready to go to the well one more time and then call the lawyer to draw up the papers.
I mean, I didn't really think that two back she had much of an excuse. And then she had to wait a little bit, and she did get blocked down the inside. So you obviously need to take that into consideration. But at the same time, she was also getting a pretty good trip prior to that. She was saving ground. And so the trainer change, obviously, to Richie Baltus is something to keep an eye on to see what happens moving forward if she continues to improve. She ran a faster figure than her previous three races. So there could be a sign that there's more to come from her. So I wouldn't draw them up yet, but I would at least start Googling lawyers.
Yeah, I don't like that point you made about, oh, she had a good trip before that. She had the trouble where the real running is in a turf race. I think you've got to give full credit to the lack of ability to get a run at that crucial stage, no?
I'm going to give credit, but not full credit. The first part of the race still matters, you know, first turn saving ground. I mean, all that stuff still matters. And so, yes, I agree. There was definitely an issue. She did have some trouble, but I'm not going to give her the full upgrade of like, oh my gosh, she was much the best and got beat. Like, I'm not doing that.
No, I wouldn't do that. I don't think she was much the best. I just think she would have gone very close, if not won. But the problem is, it's a double problem. I don't blame anybody who's just getting tired of the act of the underachieving thing. And also it happened at a stage of the race where it could well be one of these, well, everybody sees it and she gets overbet anyway. Your Googling lawyer's idea is probably the right one, but I'm being stubborn. Let's talk for a minute about the San Antonio and Gift Box winning with a 107 buyer speed figure. What did you think of Gift Box and where's he going to go next?
Well, Giftbox was sitting on a year last year. I mean, he had won the San Antonio, and then he went on to win the Santa Anita Handicap, and he ran well in the Gold Cup. You know, he was sitting on a performance. He ran a fast number. He's in good hands from a Breeders' Cup Classic winning trainer in John Sadler, and ridden by Joel Rosario, who is obviously one of the best we have in the country. There doesn't seem to be a very deep division out west. He's just got to continue to beat McKenzie, which he's done both times that he's run against McKenzie. So I like the horse, and I think that he'll continue to progress and could continue to improve. And he could be one that could find himself atop of the older division when we start to get some of these other ones retiring. I thought he was good, especially for a comeback race.
With that 107, knowing it's a comeback race, I mean, do they think about shipping to Saudi and maybe doing the Saudi-Dubai double? I'm embarrassed to say I could have Googled and looked this up. There might be news on it already. But when you just look at the last out speed figures, this horse is going to fit in those races that are worth bajillions of dollars.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a chance he'd be, you know, he could be favored in some of these races, you know? depending on who shows up, you know, obviously if the Saudi race ends up tough, you know, maybe something like the Dubai World Cup, he could end up in a spot like that. So it sounds like they're thinking, they're looking at the Saudi Cup. I one of my favorite things is to look at Horse Racing Nation. They have the stakes probables. And it is, it's like Wikipedia. It's user fed. So you could it can sometimes be misleading. This was actually posted by Mark Midland. So if Mark Midland posted that Saudi Cup is the possible next, then I would imagine he did that with some research and not just for the fun of it.
Interesting. That's going to be wild following this year and how different things are with the new Pegasus, but a race that's still going to have plenty of intrigue in it with it being Omaha Beach's final start, and then to be able to follow these giant races in the Middle East. There's a lot of money on the line and some really interesting performers. We talked about some of the horses who are going to be part of this older horse division, one who I think will be campaigned much more conservatively, but I'm still really interested in seeing what he does as a four-year-old is this performer from Shug McGahey, another one just to keep an eye on, and one that I discussed the other day with our friends at Sky Sports Racing. Let's talk for a minute, and I think only a minute right now, about the Eclipse Awards, JK. We'll do another production meeting in the middle of the show since the first one went so well. Last year, right at this time, we did a whole show on the Eclipse Awards where we went over our ballots. We were voters last year when we were affiliated with the letters. We did not get invited back independently. We're both sitting on the sidelines in terms of voting. But I'll say this. We'll do a little inside baseball, show you how the sausage is made. Notably, I think our worst rated show of the entire year. We started the new show and we got off to a flying start. The numbers on the first two shows were terrific out of the box. And then I think it was our third show was the Eclipse show, and half the people listened. And then we went back to doing our normal gimmick and the numbers went right back up again. That tells me maybe the audience isn't so interested in these theoretical conversations. If you're out there in the audience, let us know. We can still do a full Eclipse show potentially ahead of the actual Eclipse Awards maybe this year when we'll have had a little more time to do some digging. So if you have a strong opinion out there one way or the other, let us know if you want us to do a deep dive on the Eclipse Awards or if you'd rather us just keep it to high level thoughts. Where do you stand, JK, yourself? Is this a show you're wanting to do, or can you go either way?
PTF, I'm a man of the people. If people don't want to hear it, then I don't want to talk about it. no, I mean, look, I think I think there's some interesting divisions that are actually fun to talk about, and there's some that aren't. And here's why it's important, right? It's like some people will say, well, what does it matter if the horse wins an Eclipse Award? I mean, it means a lot from a breeding standpoint. Champion, now you get to tag champion to your name. And it's just nice to reflect on a sport that we spend so much time looking at to let people's opinions come into play to decide who was best overall, you know, a lot of East Coast, West Coast. And so I think that part of it can get interesting. The only divisions that are interesting to me is Horse of the Year, I think, is interesting. I think Mattoli has a case against Bricks and Mortar. I think Bricks and Mortar will win, but I think Mattoli could make a very, very strong case with the successes he had running on dirt, when dirt is king in this country. So I think that there should be a smidge more consideration for dirt types. Obviously, the two-year-old colt thing is interesting just because it's a bad division, and so I don't even have an opinion there. I mean, I guess you just pick the Breeders' Cup winner and go on.
Storm the court. Go back, though. I don't like the way you framed your Bricks and Mortar thing. Who would you vote for? You didn't actually say that.
I would vote for Mattoli, but that's just. I mean, I'm sure that makes some people angry, but yeah, I would vote for Mattoli.
I think he has a case. I think when you look at the full campaign and the money, I think you got to go Bricks and Mortar. Not you don't have to go Bricks and Mortar. I think I have to go Bricks and Mortar, and I think that's the way the voting will go. But I wouldn't say you're crazy at all. I think you can make that sort of philosophical high-level argument about that this is a country where we race horses on dirt, and those achievements by Mattoli were pretty spectacular. I'd still go the other way, but it wouldn't be if it was like delegates and I had 100 to award, I wouldn't give 100 to Bricks and Mortar and 0 to Mattoli. I too would give consideration to Mattoli. I just wanted to put your feet to the fire there. And then for the 2-year-old, I guess the real debate is it Storm the Court or is it Structor? I think that given the dirt prejudice that we talked about already, maybe prejudice is even the wrong word, the dirt lean and the Breeders' Cup win, I think I would cast the ballot for Storm the Court as well. But much respect to Structor. What you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's whole category doesn't really move me. I was at a loss for words since you brought up the Electoral College and had me thrown off a little bit.
You're a government major. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I know. So, no, I mean, there's 185 other things I'd rather debate in racing than who's going to win two-year-old juvenile colt, because I just don't really know, and I don't really care because it's not really great. I do care who wins some of the other ones because it matters. It excites me. It makes sense. There's greatness on the line. There's nothing great about this year's two-year-old division as it stands right now.
A little harsh maybe when you consider Structure's achievements and what could be under the hood there. But again, even though I might name him the most likely to be great of the ones who are going to end up of the three on that final ballot, I still would vote for the other one just because of the way it works, you know?
Yeah, I mean, good for Structor. I'm not hating on the horse. I'm just saying, like, he's not the type of horse that, like, has everyone excited about when he's coming back and where he's going to run. And, ooh, it's like, he's not like, I mean, we're excited to maybe see him on the dirt. He's a turf horse. There's no talk of Ascot and things like that. He's just a horse that's broke his maiden. He won the Pilgrim, and he won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. Those are all great things, but their greatness is not even, they're not even considering stamping him with greatness yet. He's got a long way to go to become great.
He doesn't, you know what I mean? He doesn't have the hype associated with him that, say, a Newspaper of Record did. But of course, you know, sometimes the hype doesn't work out, and sometimes the horses that just go out there and do their job end up being the ones that can reach that pantheon. But I take your point. You're somebody who really gets into the, obviously you're a gambler. I'd say you're a gambler first, but you're also very much of a fan. And in terms of, you know, the things that get fans blood pumping, that's not the division that you would choose to talk about first and foremost. I had one other Eclipse thought, and then I'll throw it back to you for any other categories that you do think would be fun to quickly talk about now. But I think this horse Abstain has a very good shot in the steeplechase category.
I was still at Druthers for all the steeplechase races this year.
You completely missed my joke, didn't you?
I got it. Insane, not vote. Yeah, I did
it,
but
every, I feel like every public ballot I've seen has had, I mean, come on. Look, if you're going to vote, it's really not that hard to look at the PPs and they're, I'm not judging. I'm sure I probably abstained in some category one of the 5 years I did it, you know, Prentice Jockey or something, where I really just felt overwhelmed and underqualified to make an assessment. And if I did do that, that was lazy and I should have called around and asked around and done the research. But no, I think it's pretty cool if you do get a chance to vote for these things, and I think it's a little weak to abstain. I will say, I'll say that without harsh judgment. I'll throw that out. That is my gut opinion, that it's a little weak.
I will say this, that if, now I know this is apples and oranges. I'm being a little bit extreme with this analogy, but like if a baseball writer was voting on who should win Horse of the Year, I would prefer them abstain because they don't know. And I don't want them regurgitating someone else's opinion for something that means so much. You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
that's interesting. I almost, so you don't
kind
mind
of understand
it.
Why? No, I mean, in that category, if you want to abstain, I kind of get it because, like, I don't know. I don't have any historical reference about what a great steeplechase horse does or doesn't
do.
I don't know. Yeah, but I don't know if winning one grade one is like amazing or winning seven grade ones is amazing. I don't know I just don't.
That sounds like a cop-out to me. You can look and you can see the money won and you can see the grading of races still the grading of races. I've spent hours
researching tennis to bet on a tennis match. Like, I don't mind taking the time to look through it. And I'm simply saying that when an award is being given and I don't have the information necessary personally to make the best decision possible, then I'd rather not grab someone else's opinion and then regurgitate that. You know what I mean?
Ish. I mean, I don't think you are regurgitating someone else's opinion if you just do the work and do a little bit of research and look at the PPs. But, you know, it's good to disagree. So I'm not going to, you know, we don't need to belabor the point. Perrin has dropped in. We're giving away bingo squares today. We've got a Perrin interruption today. I think the public schools are back in New York. Perrin's school is not. And Austin's off from school, too. Perrin, say hi to the listeners really quick while I get you this cheese stick.
Hello.
We got two appearances in a week from Perrin between the musical special and this. Do you need me to unwrap the actual cheese stick too, or can you take it from here?
I can take them from here.
Okay, great. All right. You head upstairs. We'll be done in a little bit, and we'll get on with our daddy-daughter fun day, okay? Bye, Perrin. How are you guys taking advantage of your day once we finish our work here, JK?
Man, we've been, what are we doing today? I don't know. We've been hanging out. We were meant to go to the Saints game on Sunday, but I don't know. He was a little bit under the weather earlier this week. It's kind of a quick travel turnaround. He's got school the next Monday, so we might have to skip it. We'll see. But now we've been hanging out. We went to the bowl game and watched these Texas Longhorns get after Utah pretty good, which was very impressive and glad to see that. So we've just been hanging out, playing video games. I got the second TV mounted in the living room so nice. We can play Madden and watch sports. We can watch Avengers and YouTube. There's a lot of things we can do.
So
we're doing good.
I like it. Now, how did Austin become a full meal deal Saints fan?
Man, it's actually crazy. It's really cool, though. I'm very happy about it. There's a my best friend and business partner, Robert, went to Tulane. He lives here in town. And he was there when the Saints made their first run and won the Super Bowl when Drew was there when they beat the Colts. And so he obviously became a Saints fan. I guess it was 2009. And then there's a restaurant in town in Austin called Shoal Creek Saloon. And it's got this huge Saints helmet like on top of it. And I all used to see it all the time. And I figured, oh, that must be a Saints bar. So it's an authentic like Cajun restaurant. And on Sundays when the Saints play, you have to get there like an hour early. There's nothing but Saints fans in there. They will not put on the Patriots Chiefs game. In fact, they'll run you out of there. They've got a beat of Amber on draft. It's like a really cool like New Orleans vibe. So I took Austin a few times to go watch games with Robert, and he fell in love with when they score touchdowns. They do that chant, and now he's a full meal deal Saints fan. Who dat say they're gonna beat them Saints?
That's awesome. If you told them about this is actually before your time too, but the bad old days of being a Saints fan when they had to wear the bags, well, they didn't have to, but they wore the bags over their heads, and it was they called them the Aints because they ain't gonna win a game the rest of this season. Does he know the history yet? Does he have an Archie Manning vintage jersey, Chuck Muncy glasses, anything like that?
I should educate him. No, he's not aware. He's not aware, but. He is. He's a big fan. He's got a Michael Thomas jersey. He's got a Drew Brees and Alvin Kamara. So he's ready to rock.
Clearly very into it. All right, let's move on to talk about a tweet you sent the other day regarding the 20-cent minimum. There was a force out. I guess it was the force out at Aqueduct on New Year's Eve. And you were, it wasn't an argument exactly. It was a conversation with somebody on Twitter where you were lamenting the 20-cent minimum and this other, it was, I want to talk about this because I could really see both sides of what you guys were saying. Somebody was praising it for, because he was able to write an efficient ticket or a ticket he was happy with playing anyway, that was able to get him there. He wouldn't have been able to get there in a $2 minimum bet. You were making the opposite case. Let's talk about this for a minute. I think it's a topic that deserves more than the characters in a tweet.
Well, I think the first thing I want to say, which is I think an important part, because I don't want to start the wrong narrative here. And Tony Joe kind of pointed it out. I am not saying that the computers are the enemy. The computers are very necessary. They add a lot of liquidity to the game. They bet more than we do. So I don't want to say that the computers are the problem. What I think is the problem is that the computers are playing on a field that is much better than the field we're playing on. They have access to things we don't have access to. They have entry into the tote that we don't have entry to. And we as a whole are not provided the same tools that they are provided, which makes it much harder. And so when I say that they're the enemy, that's not what I mean. I don't mean them as a whole. I'm just saying that that the industry and the tote could do a better job helping us level the playing field. But instead, they do a lot of things that indirectly help the computers, one of them being the lower minimum. And for novice players who have no idea what I'm talking about, is when the minimum, let's pretend the minimum is 50 cents. Then I can cover combinations for $1.50, for $2.50, for $4.50, $7, $12.50, $15, and I can file upload those and bang, boom, they're in the system. And now I have every combination efficiently bet. And the more efficiency that the computers have, then they're taking meat off the bone for us regular players when we actually do hit. Think about how often you hit a try and you're like, ooh, this is going to pay 5,000. Ooh, and it comes back and it's 2,200. You're like, what the? How did that happen? That's how that happened. It's because the computers, they pulled off every little piece of meat off of that bone because they were able to bet it efficiently. As the minimums are higher, dollars, $2, why we've been pushing for this $5 pick three, $10 pick three, as the minimums go higher, it's harder. It's not impossible because these computers are very liquid and they have a lot of, they got a lot of flexibility with their bankroll. They're well backed, but it makes it more difficult for them to cover all of the necessary combinations efficiently, which then leaves meat on the bone for people like my dad, who just bet his address. When he hits that, he'll get paid more than he would when it has the lower minimum. Yes, I get it. It's harder to construct a ticket when you're lower bankroll with higher minimums, but I think that in the long run, it'd be better for the game as a whole if the minimums weren't as low as they are.
I was an opponent of that point of view for many, many years and always thought that the low minimums meant it's going to be easier for the little player to emulate the big player because of that low minimum. But what I've seen in terms of these markets and the efficiency therein, I've come to agree with you, JK, that there is, you can hear Muggs coughing in the background. She apparently not a fan of the low minimums either. I've just seen the meat go off the bone, like you said, and seen these pick four pools, especially as one place where I think it's become very evident where it's just very hard to find anything resembling value. And I have to believe it's because the computers can cast a very wide net, leaving out very few horses and having outlier type combinations, at least for the minimum amount. And then on the more likely part of the spectrum, like you said, being able to weight those combinations perfectly. And in game selection terms, these pools, I mean, when I see a pool like the New Year's Eve Aqueduct pool, it makes me wonder, even with the reduced takeout, if it's worth playing, which is, I mean, I just felt like it paid criminally is too strong, but I felt like it paid so low that it looked unappealing to me. And gosh, if that day becomes unappealing to bet, I mean, my feeling about the whole rainbow situation, it just goes from bad to worse. What did you think about the numbers in the New Year's Eve pick six at Aqueduct specifically?
Yeah, I think the word I used was underwhelming. I understand the argument of like, it's not, because Pete, I think we both carry the flag that not every play in racing has to be a positive EV. Some people have their motivation come from other places. I understand the math is not great in the NHC, but the experience means something to certain people. We can't discount that as a whole. So I don't want to say that the 20 cent minimums do not help players who want to spend $48 at the racetrack and have a great opportunity at a big score. I see where that works. The problem is that in the grand scheme of things, this game has become too hard because of a lot of the obstacles we place in front of ourselves. And Tony Joe was right. He said that the computers and the minimums aren't the problem. It's takeout. And I kind of agree, but a little bit disagree. I do think that the minimums and the computers, the way that they're laid out now, there's some adjustments that need to be made that can help that. So they are still a little bit of the problem, but I'm not like mad at them.
The takeout, but the takeout's so reduced on the mandatory payout day. I don't think it's the only problem. I don't know if a rare instance where I might not fully agree with Tony.
Well, I just think that like when the takeout is high, then the rebate is high. And when the rebate is high, the computers are more motivated to attack those pools. And so if the takeout was reduced to 5% all the time, then the computers would have to try to play to win and not play to break even.
Yeah.
And if they're playing to win, then it suddenly leaves a lot more meat on the bone for players who people that listen to this show, myself, you, we're playing to win. I'm not playing to break even. You know what I'm saying? I'm playing to try to win, and so I'm designing tickets that are trying to win money. The computers are playing tickets to break even.
That's right. That's right. That's I agree with that completely. And in that sense, in day-to-day, I do believe that the takeout is – I mean, obviously, we all believe – anybody listening to this is going to agree, I think, 92% that the takeout is too high and something much lower is going to be better for the interest of every single person involved in the middle – not even the long term, in the middle term. Maybe not tomorrow, but in the middle term, it's what the game needs. I was just – making the counterpoint that it's not only that, because even when I don't know what the player's edge, it wasn't positive, I don't think. I don't know what the player's edge was on New Year's Eve, but I think that, that was a reduced takeout and it still created, like you said, this underwhelming payout. Maybe a big part of the problem ties back to field size. It wasn't the greatest field sizes on that New Year's Eve card. And maybe there's a lesson there about not doing the mandatory payout day when it's a smaller fields. I'm just hypothesizing here, but I'm thinking back to how well it seemed it all paid on Cigar Mile Day, where you had some more open races and also some more some larger fields, I believe, relatively. Could I be
right? Well, I think the problem
here
is with that. Yeah. So I think what happens is why it paid so bad on New Year's Eve and why it didn't pay so bad on
paid great on Cigar Day. I would say it paid great.
It's because when the quote-unquote singles win, not only are you combating the efficiency of the computers, your price is also affected by the singling of the world around you.
Two odds went down New Year's Eve, though. That's really why I thought it paid so badly.
Right. But it was logical to beat them.
Okay. In other words, if you were going to go for one alternative, it might have been that one. There were no separators. There were no separators. I would agree with that. The closest thing to a separator was in the last race, but by that point, the way people were playing the tickets, I think all those horses were pretty well represented too.
Right. Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I mean, I agree. It's the 20-cent pick sixes. It feels like they always come back light. And I've been playing the Stronic 5 every week for the last 10 weeks. I've never seen the payout and been like, ugh, that's kind of low. Never.
Almost the opposite.
Not one time have I been like.
Almost the opposite. Yeah. I've seen ones where I'm like, paid what? It's like the old days. Yeah. It paid what?
Yep.
And I wouldn't say about the 20 cent being bad. Again, pointing right to that Cigar Mile Day. But the vast majority, I would tend to agree.
It's not always bad. It's just a lot of times it feels lower than it should be.
We need a study.
More often than night, it feels lower than it should.
John Camardo, if you're listening, there's a way we can look at this with numbers and not just be pulling stuff out of our hat. And I'd love to see. I mean, we look at it in terms of, versus the parlay. Look at the pay versus the parlay and look how relevant the field sizes is. We can get some data and we can have a really smart conversation about this that maybe is data we could even then pass along to the places making the decisions about when to make the mandatory payout day. Maybe we can help create some positive change here too. That's always our hope. Yeah, we whine sometimes, but we're also always trying to make things better. Anything left to say on this topic, JK, or should we move on to some handicapping?
Yeah, I mean, we covered at least the basic idea. I'm sure we'll have some follow-up so we can touch base on.
I had a whole other topic that we could get 10 minutes out of. We'll put a pin in that, though. It's not that topic isn't going anywhere. Based on a really interesting tweet Ron Flatter sent out. Ron was another one of the folks nominated for that ABR Audio Award. And if you're not following him, he's worth seeking out as well. But we'll put a pin in that and get to it later. Let's move out and just talk about the two stakes at Santa Anita on Saturday. We will do the Naira Pick 5 on the other show. We'll do a very short Naira show that'll almost be like an extension of this one that'll be posting probably within hours of this one going up. But let's talk about the sham. JK, I know you so well. Which Baffert are you picking, Authentic or Azul Coast?
Neither one of them.
Really? I'm shocked. Give me your case against.
I'll give you a case against. Authentic's down on the rail, stretching out from 5.5 to a mile. Pretty big jump. He's buried down on the inside. I wouldn't be surprised. Goes to the front, wires, wins. That's great. But it's Baffert, and if you can beat Baffert, you got to try to do it when you can. I'm going to try to beat the horse stretching out. Azul Coast, the same thing. He come from off of it. He's going to come from off of it. Won the mud last time. Did it well. Drayton picked the other one, which I think is very interesting. Joel shows up on this one. It's not like it's a downgrade. Possibly, and I think most people would say it's an upgrade in rider from Drayden to Joel. No offense to Drayden. Joel's been doing it longer. And so I feel like those two are both going to take so much money. There's an unbelievable opportunity to take Tyshawn on the outside with Aaron Ryder, Richie Baltus. Horse won well last time on a fast track on this racetrack. Breeders' Cup weekend, going the two-turn mile. I just think that one makes a lot of sense. You're going to get a ton of value on Tayshawn based on the fact that Tyshawn maybe, I don't know. Tayshawn Prince, you remember a team he used to play for, Pete? That was in your basketball days.
Yeah, but it's not coming back to me. I've blocked out a lot of that era, JK.
The Detroit Pistons, Tayshawn Prince.
That sounds right, actually.
The little skinny, light-skinned cat used to always get to the rack.
I didn't play a ton of Pistons back in the day, but that definitely sounds right.
They were good when they had Chauncey Billups. Anyway, so I like the horse drawn to the outside. And plus, drawn outside, young horses should be in the clear, no kickback. I think a great opportunity to make some money to end out that late pick five.
I had a little form case I was going to make on Tayshawn as well. I was hoping you'd take a Baffert so I could make the contrarian case. But looking at Tiz Magician, who's a very interesting horse. Tiz Magician, a Mandela runner, has a little bit, and this is an exaggeration, don't at me, but has a little bit of an Omaha Beach light look for my racehorse and Spendthrift. And what I mean by that is, took a little bit of a while to get going, had a few seconds, got some real racing experience. This one was second to Tyshawn, came back, was second again, and then just the other day stepped up, ran an 85 buyer speed figure. I think this is a pretty solid horse, and I think Tyshawn's form is stronger than the Bafferts coming out of their races. So I'm with you. We're going two votes for I keep saying it both ways. What are we going to go with, Tayshawn?
I like Tayshawn because I like Tayshawn Prince, but I bet it's Tayshawn.
Okay. We could have, of course, just watched a replay and not be having this silly conversation, but there you go.
Well, no, we would have listened to Trevor. If we'd have listened to Trevor August 17th, that would have only confused us. Our only hope would have been for Frank Miramonte on Twitter.
Frank would have got it. Frank would have nailed it. No offense to Trevor.
Speaking of Trevor, if you look back at Tayshawn's first win against Ginobili, Trevor butchered that somehow.
Ginobili.
He's never watched a basketball game.
Yeah, that's a bad one. That I can be forgiven for spacing on Tayshawn.
Hall of Famer, not picking some of the greatest calls in my opinion.
We love him. We love him.
Just yeah.
Didn't Travis have a notably funny one like that with Syndergaard or some other Met that a very rare mistake from Travis Stone, who of course we love and think is one of the best in the business. Don't mean to be picking on these race callers here, but I think it just happens. You're like heads in one space, and you know it's Syndergaard.
I think he might have had. Yeah, it sounds like you're being defensive, Mr. Alcibiades, whatever.
It's very easy. It's very easy to screw up a name. I still, years later, get people from Kentucky listening back through the archives making fun of me for that one. But it's no less than I deserve. Let's move on to this other graded stakes race. It's the San Gabriel. I feel like Majestic Eagle is coming out of the best races and should sit a good trip here. What do you think, JK?
Yeah, I mean, I see where you're coming from there. Was 44-1 that day, got beat by Next Shares, who was also a big price. I mean, look, it makes sense. And the horses run well at Santa Anita's, won twice at Santa Anita. But my attention kind of went to Cleopatra's Strike. I know the horse is cutting back off a mile and a half, but ran well that day, got a fast figure. And then if you look two back, the mile and a quarter race was another fast figure. I just think that this horse is going to get a better trip, should sit down on the inside. Abel Cedillo has been riding lights out in California, and I thought this one made a lot of sense. I think it's kind of a spready type of race. I'd want to use more than one, but for my top pick and for the sake of the show, I'll go with Cleopatra's Strike.
The other one I considered, I was guessing Cleopatra's Strike would be, didn't look at this with morning lines, but was guessing Cleopatra's Strike was going to be considerably lower than Majestic Eagle. If I'm wrong about that, I could see splitting them. I didn't see much between them. I was thinking you could get away with two against the field, but it sounds like you would want a little bit more coverage here.
Yeah, it's like it's my turf racing motto now. It's like single or all of them. You know, well, not all of them really, but you know, I single or you know, find some ways to get some good coverage because you know it's the way that it works. It's a you know, it's not the best horse wins every time. And in fact, I've been having some success lately with turf, and I'm considering opening the door for the NHC and using some turf races.
I think you have to. I always thought that plan of yours was insane and gave you no chance to win, if I'm being honest. You're good. It was different that one year that Paul won. It was the year that Paul won, every race was off the turf, so it made sense to stay away from turf racing.
But it's not my reason for doing it was not because, I mean, I know you're not saying that, but my reason for doing it was not because Paul did it and he had success. It was, I honestly feel like out of 15 races, if I just play 5-1 shots and above on the dirt, I have a better shot of finding them more consistently than cherry picking the turf spots because I'm going to be right 3 or 4 times out of 15.
I don't think you can win doing it. I don't think you can. I think you could get in the semis as you did 1 year. But I think, you know, to really win the thing, you got to find the bad favorites and just take your shot of the one of the three long shots that can win. And you got to get, you know, you got to get lucky to win that thing.
No, it's going to be my basic plan. You know, like I said, I've been working on this kind of new kind of turf thing with like internals and I'm still trying to work through it. But I think that I'll probably use it as I'll put the information in, and if something pops out at me, then that one can get put on a short list as a possible play.
I like the sound of that, and I also like the idea of when you refine that a bit more, whatever you feel comfortable sharing sounds like something people might be able to learn from. So we'll return to that at some point. But JK, we're going to close this one out. Well, there's going to be more for us. We're going to do the Naira Betts late pick 5 in a few minutes, but let's wrap this one. I want to thank you. I want to thank our sponsors. This is the late week show, so we'll include Black Type Thoroughbreds, Stats Race Lens, and of course our buddies at 10 Strike Racing and our founding partner Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. Most of all, I want to thank all the fans, especially those of you who filled out our survey. We got some great data that's going to help us a lot as we head into 2020, but mostly you guys just make this show so much fun to do. Feel free to reach out with questions, comments, etc. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Looms Boldly. He's at UT Big Hair. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is the People's Champion, Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.